The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 5th of September. On the podcast today, I have John Mayer, money analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Kodal Minerals, KOD's ticker there. And of course, they've just released their first or maiden JORC resource. And we also talk about Soul Gold and discuss generally commodities that are hot at the moment, copper, lithium, and all the EV or new energy type sort of commodities. Plus, I have Nicola Duke on the podcast today. Nicola looks at the following charts. And by the way, you can see the video of these charts. We go through some of the charts here on the blog here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Okay, I'm just trying to remind myself then. The stocks she looks at are Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG, Kodal Minerals, KOD, Greatland Gold, GGP, Vodafone, there's a request, VOD, and Metal Tiger. Plus, as always, I have the top five most liked RNSs and the top five most followed companies.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good form, thank you.
Yeah, well, listen, one of the companies we've often chatted about has had some news out today, and it's the news that has been sort of signposted for a while, and the share price has risen on expectation, and that's Kodal Minerals, of course, maiden JORC resource. And I often say about markets, especially small cap stocks that are pre-revenue and just rely on news to generate sort of value in their share price, it's the expectation of news is very powerful, and in the majority of times, it's more powerful than the actual news, because you get the imagination of investors going running wild. And people are buying, it's going to be massive. And then all of a sudden, the news lands, and it's decent news. It was very decent news, I thought. And the share price comes back, like today, Kodal Minerals, by 20-odd%. You think, what is going on? So anyway, take us through the detail of what you've been looking at, and what's your thoughts on it, John?
My thoughts are that yes, this is a slightly smaller resource than might have been expected. But what is really important is what this is telling us. And The JORC resource, and what's behind the JORC resource, is saying that Kodal can put this into production much more quickly and really very effectively, I think. So we were expecting a higher grade than 1.2%. This is still within the top 15 of global lithium projects. So it's good quality. It's right up there. And we know that one can build a simple concentrator for $25 to $50 million, that this product can be shipped to China more than economically, especially where lithium prices are right now for these sorts of concentrates, and that the logistical chain is manageable. So I think they're looking for sensible production rate, and we can see a project that is now ready for permitting, ready for financing, almost ready for construction. So this is key, because I think Kodal will almost have a first mover advantage in the region for getting this project up and running and actually into cash flow at some point, hopefully next year.
Yeah, exactly. So what is it? 17.1 million tonnes at 1.2, isn't it, percent lithium?
Yes, and we were looking at the historic drill results. We've got a table of all the historic drill results published by Kodal, and we think the consultants have cut the figures back fairly aggressively. We would really have been looking for a grade of 1.35, 1.4% lithium. That's perhaps not so critical, frankly. It's what can you upgrade the lithium to with a concentrator plant? We think they can upgrade to 5.5, maybe even 6% lithium. Then they'll truck that down to the port of Abidjan. They'll probably run about 12 trucks a day, and then off that they can generate some very serious cash flow. So it's a nice simple project. The Chinese are very, very keen to get the material. I think the Chinese will actually fund. They'll probably debt fund the project. they reckon they can build this for something like $25 million. For the JORC resource, you have to put economic parameters into a JORC resource. So I think the company's using $50 million. They obviously have to use the resource that's here, but there are a number of costs. So, for example, it might cost about $90 a ton to truck the material down to the coast. That seems like an expensive cost, but I think there's a lot of fat built into it, and there's more than enough margin to be made off this product, because you're going to be selling it for $850-$900 a ton. So there's good margin to be made here, and I think really quite a rapid development program from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Have you got that? They've got the hot product. They've got a Chinese backer there, and low capex, decent margin, and it's not long until, like you said, they can start sort of producing some. So, decent story. And I think, you know, overdone the fall today, maybe. But, you know, like anything, when something falls as heavily, well, 25% I'm looking at the moment, when something falls as heavily, of course, the risk goes down because the value of the company goes down. So, the potential upside goes up. So, you know, it's if you're looking for a lithium stock for your portfolio, do some research on Kodal. It's worth doing. It's one of those out there, because, you know, we all know, you know, lithium has a definitely a bullish future, isn't it? So and also talking about bullish futures in regards to EVs and stuff like that, copper, because I know you got another story about copper there, John. It's a nice seamless link there, wasn't it?
Well, very interesting news today that BHP have snapped up a 6.1% stake in Solgold. They didn't go to the company directly for that stake. They bought it off another player in the market. That's very interesting. That says that BHP want to have a seat at the table, want to build a stake in this business, and want to be a part of whatever is going to happen going forwards. Normally, major companies like to go directly to a company, so buy a stake and put money, you know, sit so that the new money goes into the ground. This is a bit like BHP saying, well, we're going to fight our way into this one. They were rejected about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, when Newcrest actually came in. Newcrest muscled BHP out of the way to put money into the project. So their money has gone and is going directly into the ground. And BHP have done two funding rounds with the company now. Newcrest have done two funding rounds with the company. And I think what this tells us on a broader level is that the majors, BHP, Rio Tinto, Vale, Glencore, Anglo American, and others, who've all built teams of experts who are looking around the market to see what are the next interesting projects to come through. So they're supporting these teams of experts, and we know quite a few of these people, and we know that they're looking to put money into projects through junior companies. It's an interesting world, because the majors pulled back from a lot of their own exploration some years ago. The geologists came out of the major companies with the expertise, with the knowledge that they have. They set up a lot of these junior companies, so that the juniors are often run by very good quality people who've worked for larger organizations. It does take them a while to get used to working within the junior markets and within the constraints of small companies, but a lot of them make that transition relatively well, and the fruits of that are coming through in the quality of the projects that we're now seeing in these smaller companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did say just before we come on, I said, well, are they taking advantage of the dip in the copper price at the moment? Because, you know, it's a good time to buy. As long as we've got the dip at the moment, we all know, you know, stretching out a couple of the time frame, 5-10 years, that there's a copper crunch happening. But you think that isn't the case necessarily?
No, I mean, I know the market makers will look at the copper price and tick prices up and down accordingly. But in reality, in the big world out there, the majors are looking 10 years, 15 years ahead. They're looking to develop portfolios of projects that will take a minimum of 5 years before they really get to the next stage. And that's fine. So they're not looking at today's copper price. They're not even looking at the average copper price over the year from this perspective. They're looking at where are these commodity prices going to be in 10 or 15 years' time. And it's a good view, because they can see that electric vehicles and all the electrification that's going on is going to require a lot more copper, a lot more lithium, more cobalt, and a whole range of commodities that, frankly, are going to be in short supply.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you give me a nice little analogy there, which I think you should say again. I said, but they've got so much money, these companies, the big boys, and they like you say, they don't worry about micro trends in the share price. They're looking at the long-term macro trend. But I like your analogy you gave there, John. But, what was it?
I forget which one that was.
I think it was about Christina Narcissus.
Oh, yes, yes. If Christina Narcissus was in a shop looking for a dress, she's not going to worry about whether it's in the sale or whether it's not in the sale.
10% off. Yeah, 10% off. She wouldn't care about that. No, 20% off. She's having it. She likes it. She's having it, you know. I've got several multi-millions in my bank account. I don't care if I'm getting a couple of $100 off. Who cares? Exactly. So copper, lithium. I mean, it's John, I want you to put your neck on the line here, and it's a very odd question. I don't suppose you can compare because they're apples and oranges in commodity terms. But what do you think is going to be the hottest commodity? Because I've looked around all the commodities, you know, and I keep coming back to copper because that is, you know, not only for the general economy, the barometer for global growth, but of course we've got this extra spin now, this extra demand coming from EV. And I thought, well, hang on, if you just want to get exposure to this new electric vehicle for a revolution, look, go no further than copper. You don't have to. But I mean, would you go elsewhere as well as copper, or, you know, just in case?
Well, copper is the major commodity that I'm sure will continue to do very well. And actually, the Chinese almost buy copper more as a store of value than they buy gold, for example. Yeah. But for me, the metal that I think will really have a great future on a lasting and enduring basis is going to be nickel. And the reason for that is that if you look at the way they are making batteries today, if you look at, for example, fuel cells, if you look at anything that is to do with new energy technology, it always uses nickel as the current collector. And there aren't many nickel mines in the world. We see very few new nickel projects around. They are difficult to finance when they do come through because the price has been so volatile over the years. But nickel is the one that I think will stand out. If we go back to a presentation by the Rio Tinto Ventures Group, they reckon that tin would also be tin was the top of their list. The reason for tin is because tin, again, is for soldering. It's the way you connect all these electrical connections together. And is often overlooked. And again, very few new tin mines in the world. I mean, in fact, it's really hard to think of new tin projects around the place. You've got South Crofty in Cornwall, and a few things like that. But the resurrection of some of these old mines will probably become very important for supporting tin supply going forwards. So for me, tin and nickel are more adventurous than copper, but I think have great futures going forwards.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Tin, nickel, copper, lithium. Cool. Marvellous, John. Good to speak to you, and we'll chat again next week.
You're very welcome. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
It's a day of the week in which we call... What is it, Nick?
Hump Day.
It's only you ever call it that. No, we call it a Wednesday. We do not call it Hump Day. I don't want to know what you and James got to.
Actually, today, this week it's Tuesday. I'm counting it as Tuesday because Monday was a holiday in America, and then turnaround Tuesday is usually a day for market reversals.
You're so American. I take Monday off. I'm with Americans, you know. Monday.
Quiet day at the market. Yeah, it was a quiet day.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, it's a Wednesday, of course, and
it's not today.
Yeah, I just feel September hasn't really kicked in yet. My kids are going back to school today, which is good. That's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. And I just feel like, you know, we get a bit of volume start of the day, and then all of a sudden it just plateaus out. And that's it sometimes on some stocks, of course. You get the RNSs come out, that's when the volume comes out and all the news comes out. But then it sort of dries up. But so I don't think we're fully into it. I think there's still a few brokers, you know, just getting back into it, you know, today and the week maybe. But anyway, let's look at some stocks. By the way, Nick, what happened with Bitcoin? I noticed someone said it dropped like $420 in a second or something ridiculous.
Yeah, in 10 seconds, yeah. It's been in a bit of a short squeeze. Last week, around 7,000, there was this massive build-up in short positions, leveraged shorts. And since then, it kind of squeezed up probably another, $450 above 7,000, squeeze them out, and then, you know, like with short squeezes, once it's over, kaplunk, it's fallen. What's interesting about this is if it follows through and it keeps going lower, the sharp reversal in Bitcoin in December was what preceded a really nasty sell-off in the stock market, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a risk indicator.
Yeah, exactly. And what's happening here? I mean, it seems like we get a bit of a rally. Is it edging upwards? I mean, look on the chart there. Is it edging up or what?
Not really, not much. It's a pretty much of let's get the chart across. It's a bit of a dead cat at the moment here in Bitcoin. So here's what I think. We've got pretty good support around 6,800. We're not there yet. If you look on a 15-minute, we're still trending lower. So, we're going to see a bounce. 6,800 is where it's going to come.
That's a wedge, isn't it? I use TradingView charts. Very good. I'd advise someone to have a crack at that. If you want a simplified chart, it's obviously, you can see them on Vox, simplified charts, but I like to mess around a bit and TradingView. So it saves whatever I put on there, you know, annotates the chart, whatever I put on there. Of course, you've got this massive wedge, haven't we, coming down from the surface, so 20,000 down to, this recent sort of rally at 7.6.
Daily, yeah.
Yeah. What do you say? So were you saying if it rallies above, it's good to go? What are you saying?
I wanted us to see. I was looking at the weekly moving averages, and we stalled at the weekly 20 moving average. Didn't get as far as the 200 moving average that I was looking for. I'm just putting my moving averages back on here. So, you know, for me, it's like, oh, we're going to retest the lows or at least pull back 50% here. Personally, I think we could see another leg lower. I think everyone's got a bit complacent and bullish.
Yeah. That thing is like a line under the 6,000 mark. It's touched that twice. But a downward channel right there. I mean, at the moment, you can put two sort of lines, can't you, from the 20,000 and from the recent sort of highs at 7,000.
Yeah, we've got a pretty... 7,500,
is it 7,500, though? 7,500. It stays above that for a while. I think this could be good, don't you think?
If we can, like, I'd like to see how this plays out. One of the reasons I'm a bit uncomfortable is the rally that we've had from the mid-August low has been quite choppy and overlapping and slow. It's been a real choppy grind. It doesn't look like a new impulsive move to me, which means probably a retest of the lows.
And above 8.5. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Marvelous stuff. All right. Let's get into some stocks here.
What was interesting today is in Ethereum, because if I'm showing you a chart of Ethereum, this is a 4-hour chart. This was a beautiful bearish pennant. You could see very clearly on the daily as well. That broke down. So that's in a proper bear trend. If you want to sell something, sell Ethereum, not Bitcoin.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Let's look at. Anglo-African oil and gas. I did tweet out a little GIF yesterday, or a little. It was a GIF, but this boy, and he throws this basketball. He thinks it's a slam dunk. He turns around the camera with his fingers in the air, going, "Yes, it's in," and it bounces. Doesn't hit. Doesn't go into the hoop. He's got his back to the ball, and the basketball's bouncing back towards him in slow motion, and literally. He's walking towards the camera, very confident, cocky, thinking he's got it in the basket. Turns around, the ball smacks him in the face. And I say, sometimes that's like an RNS. With AIM companies, you're looking forward to a good RNS. And all of a sudden, you know, a disaster comes out, you know, in release. And it's a bit like that. And that happened with the Anglo-African oil and gas. They're in the middle of a massive sort of drilling program here. Some excellent upside potential could happen if they discover some of the big sort of resources deep down the drill. But the rig, is that a technical problem, a fault, a problem with a rig? And it's dropped, like you say today, by 25%, something like that. So it's obviously the oils can still be there and they can still access that, but there's a delay in what's happening here. So of course people like uncertainty, hate delays, and so that's why it's dropped off a cliff. So what do you reckon on AAOG, Nicolas?
I reckon on AAOG, you know, we had this stock, when we looked at what we did in August, we bunched up our moving averages really tight into sort of wedge consolidation. And what happened, we broke out the bottom of it, unfortunately. But when you have flat moving averages, like you could see in August, there's no trend and it becomes a range trade. So what we've done here is retested the bottom of the range, which is the 8.55 low from May. So this should be really good support. This is a range trade. And the way to play it is that the bottom of the range holds until we break out. So I think it's, I'd like to see how we close, but if we close above that 8.55 low, I think that we could see a decent rally back up to fill the gap.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I mean, we'll have to get some guidance from the companies of what happens next, because they haven't said how long the delay will be, I don't think. Okay, Kodal Minerals. This is a very interesting one. It rallied very strongly. KOD, they're in lithium, they're in Mali there, and they were working towards a maiden JORC resource. JORC is obviously a standard that's accepted worldwide when you're drilling and exploring. And it really rallied strongly, Kodal, off this. I got out on that big sort of spike-ish, just too early, really, but didn't know where it was coming out. And I thought, for a junior explorer, I think this is pretty much the value here is all priced in. And it came out today with their JORC resource, and actually it dropped 20%. It was a good resource. I think either it was priced in, or people are expecting a bigger resource, or people now fear that there may be a placing happening. I think they've got cash anyway. I don't think they need to do that. But like I said, AIM stocks, where there's no revenue, pre-revenue stocks, the rise happens on the expectation of news, not on the actual news itself. So if you're in a stock that's expecting news and it's rallying strongly, get prepared for a little bit of a pullback. Maybe de-risk a little bit. Who knows? But if you're a long-term investor, you don't worry about that, because I think it's good news anyway. Kodal. And I speak to John Mayer on the podcast about this, and he knows a lot about them. So COD. Good COD. That's a big drop. Bigger than I thought. What do you think, Nicola?
Good God, so far, you know, we've been in a really nasty downtrend basically since May. We got underneath the daily moving averages and they were a resistance all the way down. The rally that we made on the last day of July took us above all of those moving averages. It's normal to come back and retest them, perhaps not as sharply as we've seen in this pullback today, but if we are going to find some support and if we are going to keep going higher, we do need to hold sort of 1870, 0.187 level. And so this really, where we've tagged on the lows today, is ideal support. I'm looking at a weekly chart for these weekly moving averages, and you can see that low today is also the daily moving averages. So the daily 50 and the daily 200. As long as we hold there and bounce from there, then I think that there's a good chance we go higher, and confirmation that we are moving higher will be back above 235 and the daily 20. So potentially not a disaster, just a sharp pullback to test support. However, if you see a close below 0.175, that for me would be probably a get out of dodge. We're likely to see one leg lower.
Yeah, okay.
And if we do see one leg lower, support is at 0.095. So I wouldn't want to hodl down to there. I think you should get out and wait.
Listen, you're saying all the hodls, Nicola, just for people who are not in cryptocurrency.
Okay, don't hold and wait for it to come back. If you drop below the 200-day moving average, it's a really good indicator for trend for a reason. I would say leave it alone and wait for it to come back.
Okay, talking about explorers, we've got Greatland Gold next, GDP. They had good news, they had bad news, then good news, then bad news, then good news. They've had a couple of things up and down. So the chart is, I assume, I haven't looked at the chart, but I assume it's a bit, let's have a look, yes, up, down, look at that. That's an ugly looking chart, isn't it? It's all over the place. Yeah, what's going on
here? It is, but you know, gold has been a bit ugly. Gold, the commodity, has been really hit by strong US dollar prices. So, you know, but so it's only weak against the US dollar. And, you know, I think that this, again, has pulled back to test these moving averages. So we had a spectacular rally in June. We've pulled back to test these daily moving averages. The 200-day moving average and all of the bunched up daily 20s and 50s, I think this is an ideal place for this to rally. I am looking for a daily close above the 50 to confirm. So above 1.39, I would say crack on. We should retest the highs.
Okay.
Again, though... Remember that 200-day is a really good trend indicator for a reason. A daily close back below the round number one, or back below that 20 moving average, says back to the bottom of the range, and that's at 0.5. So don't hang on. Do it with a tight stop.
Okay, next one. Can we see your foot, please? Lovely. Are you a big fan of feet?
Oh, not this one. Look at it.
Well,
what the hell?
This is Foot Asylum. They've done a trading update of late, and this is something you never want to hear in a trading update, okay? And it says here, despite an ongoing program of investment to drive sales, Foot Asylum's revenue growth for full year 19 is now expected to be below current market expectations. As a result of this, and a lower overall gross margin, so the gross margin is going down as well, from a higher amount of clearance activity in stores, the board now expects adjusted EBITDA, which is rubbish earnings, for a full year to be significantly lower than previous guidance, at less than half the full year 2018 adjusted EBITDA of 12.5 million. So EBITDA was 12.5 million. It's going to be now less than half of that. So you say, what, six, what, five, what? So say 5.5 million, six, what? And then, you know, on those full set of results last year, they made a tiny profit of 160 grand. So now that's going to go down. You're thinking, okay, hang on. They're valued at 132 million. They're going to make a loss this year. What's going on here? They're, you know, big stores, big turnover. But like I said, you know, profit is where sanity is. Revenue's, you know, vanity. So it's, you've got to let it settle. You don't know where the story's going at the moment. Retail's a hard space. They are doing, they are growing in sort of revenue looks, but they're spending like crazy. So who knows? Who knows?
I wonder. You know, like I wonder if they're adding it up wrong, because they're saying at the moment that online sales make up, have gone from being about 10% of all purchases to about 15%. And they think eventually that it'll settle out around 25%. I'm sorry, but I think it's much bigger than that. Yeah. I think either they're adding it up wrong. I almost buy nothing in a real shop.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going that way as well, isn't it?
And I mean, so, you know, I think either they're underestimating it. So when you look, when I look at that, I think, you know, well, it's not that bad. Why do these retailers look so terrible? They can't all like fail. But I think that they are definitely under reporting or underestimating how much of sales have moved online.
Yeah, so they had, I'm just looking at there. So online, with full year for 2019, they're saying 30 million. Last year, it was 23.5 million. And store was 66 million, almost just more than double online. And last year was 59. So they're growing. But it says 12.4% growth store, 28.5% growth in online, they're hoping. But of course, they're now spending more. Their gross margin has gone down. And they're going to be loss making by the looks of it. So you've got to say, where's this settling? You know, at the moment, their sort of net assets the last financial year was 42 million. But their cash burn now will be going down. So that'll come off their current assets, and so you've got to understand that. So, you know, their asset value will go down, you know. So anyway, so go for it, Nick. What do you reckon?
There's a couple of ways to calculate where this is going to stop. One of them is we can use FIB projections. And if I do that, I'm afraid I think that we end up around with a low around 21.6 to 23. So sort of 22, 23 area. However, there's another way, which is very popular in American stocks, which is you take the distance of the gap and double it. So if our gap here was from 83 down to about 56, and we project that twice the distance, then we should be, on that basis, pretty close to a low. It should come in around just under where we are now, around 30, 29 or 30. So I would watch the price action around 29 or 30. I think we could get at least a dead cat bounce there. And if we don't, if we can't hold on to 30, then lots and lots lines up at 22, 23 for this one.
Yeah.
You know, be careful catching those falling refrigerators. So look on a low time frame, like I've got it down here on a 15 minute, you know, something like a double bottom, you know, short time frame, or a flip of these moving averages on a 5 minute or something like that might be a better indicator of a bottom. I wouldn't just pile in and buy levels blind, because I think it's gone too far in this one. I'd be watching some good price action. We're starting to see some bullish divergence. It's, you know, slowing down a bit, but let's see.
And as always, though, I mean, you know, as an investor, you're a trader, it's good to have this, because you're looking at charts, I'm looking at I look at charts and fundamentals. You've got to try and value the company. You know, try and put a value in the company that's conservative. And if it gets towards that level, so you're looking at market capitalization here rather than share price. You know, and so you've got to say, okay, it's valued at 32 million now. The current assets they had was 26 million. Their net assets was 42 million. They're going to be, obviously, that's going to be reducing because they're going to be cash burning and all that stuff. So you've got to think, okay, listen, I think for this business doing this, if they're going to need turnover 98 million. and you've got to look at what's their margins there. I mean, margins in retail are not very big, are they? You've got to look at their margins and think, okay, just in fact, EBITDA margins are 6.4%. All right, so you've got to say, let's take it down to 5%. Let's say they get a 5% margin there, you know, on 98 grand. So that's going to be, 10% would be 9 million profit, 5% would be 4.5 million. That's where they should be heading, 4.5 million, times that by, you know, PE to 10, 40. They are over 40 million. I don't think it's particularly cheap at the moment where they are. So
it's still not, you don't think it's still cheap? Okay.
No, in fact, 30 million. Yeah, but do you know what? Yes, I don't know, but at the moment, they're in a worrying situation where their forward guidance is getting worse. So they're going, hang on, when does it stop? When does it start getting better? So I need to read more through the trading statements, think, okay, is this a one-off blip? Are you going to be getting better throughout, 2019? Or is it going to get again, sort of doubtful and getting worse? I don't know. So it's the uncertainty, isn't it? But taking it apart as a business, how much can you sell it? Just looking at the assets. Look at their trading, see what you think. But yeah, do you know what? It's not overly expensive here. But again, you've got to look at the chart, see where it settles a little bit, and you, rather than just pile in, just, you've got plenty of time.
Yeah.
It's not going to rise. It's not going to do double overnight. You've got plenty of time to sort of analyse the shares and do a bit of research and look at where you think the market's going and read through the statements over and over again and thinking, read it a couple of times. Read it once, twice, trading update. Look at the final results and then make a value judgment on the company and thinking, okay. And scale in. That's what I always do. Scale in. Never go, as an investor, never go whole hog, But, yes.
22-23 then, if it's got a little bit further to go. 22-23, that's where I'd be looking for foot.
Okay, yeah. It's touched down, it's got one foot on the floor. I think it needs another foot lower. That's all I think. It's standing on the stairs there. There's no bottoms in there. Look at really. Ignore RSIs on this kind of thing, I think, and just wait for, like you say, support levels and wait for double bottom maybe and all that kind of stuff,
Yeah, okay. Look for all those kind of seasonal things.
Okay. Nicola, lovely. What's your choice of footwear, by the way? Now, when you're charting, what do you like to wear on your chart now, on your foot?
I've got Birkenstocks on.
I thought you'd be a Birkenstock girl. I thought you would be. Have you got a chance for one more there? Anything?
Let's take a look at Vodafone and MTR for Sean. Hi, Sean. So, Vodafone, I've been a bit disappointed this one the last week. If we look at the rally that this has made since 2002, this has been a really kind of choppy, overlapping rally that topped out in 2015. And we've been looking, where is this going to come back to? I had 50% retrace, which would be around 168.20. And we finally got there last week. It's also, if I measure from the high in May 2015 to the low that we made in February 2017, an equal measured move correction. So I was really hopeful for some bullish price action at 168. And we haven't seen it. Not only that, it's been really frustrating that we've dropped underneath and we're holding underneath this level. It's almost as like it's a bit of a squeaker. So if I wanted to buy Vodafone, I would want to see it close above 168.20. And then I would say, okay, we've got a bit of a chance because we've held this level and we're going to rally. If we don't, and if we can't get back above 168, I'm afraid the next support all lines up at 148.7 for 148.5. One sort of 148 area for Vodafone, and it's not a buy. Mm. So very frustrating. But if we can recover this 168 level, it was all a little bit of a fake out, and which it can do on a weekly or a monthly basis, and then I'd be happy to think that we've turned it around.
Marvellous
so
stuff.
That is Vodafone. Okay, and okay, last so of all, we'll quickly do MTR. So do you don't trade Vodafone, you don't look at Vodafone?
I don't trade.
You're
how
so busy
dare
with
you?
Investment in BT, aren't you?
Yeah, no, do you know what? I only hold two, I think, or three revenue-generating stocks, and they are annoying. So they are annoying me. They're just the bane of my life. They're turnarounds, though. So they're always... And I learned a lesson from turnaround companies that have revenue and profits. They take longer than you think because you've got, obviously, first of all, you've got forward guidance as to how bad it's going to be. Then you've got the actual reality of, an update as how bad it's going to be. And then you've got an update of how bad it's going to be further on. So you've got loads. It takes like a year, 2 years to wash out of the system, out of their financial reports before it starts to turn around, So it takes a long time. So, no rush in any of these stocks, on the big cap stocks with revenue. There's no rush on jumping into turnarounds. They take ages. Anyway, go on. MTR.
I'm liking the look of MTR. I love how we came back in this one. The second swing lower that we made at the second half of August was 61.8 of the first one. So it looks like an ABC correction to me. I love how we've bounced off the 200-day moving average. I think after this pullback inside day that we made yesterday, we should continue higher to at least back to 2.84 and the 50 moving average and 50% of this drop. And then if we can go beyond that, then I think we continue higher back to the top of the range around 3.4, but 2.84 short-term upside target, yes. Above 3.4, then obviously we're going to fly, but yeah, that's how it's looking.
Okay,
really awesome. Really good reaction at the 200-day moving average, should see some follow through.
Okay, lovely. And marvellous, Nicola. Thank you very much for that. And that's it for today, and I'll put you on the main podcast, I think, because why not? You're Nicola Duke. You're the queen of crypto.
Right. Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Speak
Thanks
soon.
For coming.
Bye-bye. By the way, if you're listening on the podcast, you can see this video live on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/VoxMarkets.
Perfect.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. It's always there. Predator Oil and Gas, PRD. At four, Barron Oil, or Boyle, as the ticker is there. At three, Alpha Growth, ALGW. Seen that being talked about a lot on Twitter for a while, and it's finally had a big rise there, I think. At two, Europa Metals, EUZ. And number one, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, was Anglo African Oil and Gas. Of course, had a bit of a fall off, and I talked about that with Nicola Duke. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At four, five, pardon? Coro Energy, C-O-R-O. At four, Rehabol Resources, placing to raise 4.8 million. I think there's a format error in the RNS there, because it comes out as a question mark. It said placing to raise 4.8 million. At three, update on Blueberry Project. It's fast, of course. At two, Codal Minerals. Maiden mineral resource of 17.3 million tonnes at 1.2 lithium. And number one most liked RNS came from Motive Bio. Iclaprim data presented at the conference there. Too many letters there, but MTFB is a ticker there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchas apreciatas.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.